All right, it's a few minutes after nine. Welcome to everybody. We'll get started here. We'll have a pledge and our invocation.
Acceptable in thy sight and to glorify your name. Lord, forgive our many sins. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Any public comments that you know of? All right, item number one is where we invite public comments, requests for information on non-agenda items. Nobody has filled out a form, but if there's anybody that has something they've forgotten to fill out a form, all right, we'll move on to item number two, consider and possibly approve minutes from our November 28th special meeting of Commissioners Court.
Judge, I've reviewed those with April Ridgway, and they have been, what minor things were wrong have been amended, and I move that they be approved as they are amended.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Boggs, second by Commissioner Hockaday for the approval of our minutes from last meeting 2 weeks ago. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Item number three. I've asked Charlie Smith with our Industrial Foundation to come and speak today about a subject that you all were exposed to a week or so ago when we had our meeting up at the Extension office. And this is a matter that involves whether or not we should enact a resolution having to do with Freeport exemptions, warehousing, and new legislation that would impact the way that our local companies could house inventory and thereby avoid ad valorem taxes. And there are pros and cons. And we heard a recommendation from Jim Allison, General Counsel for Texas Association of Counties, reminding us that we had until December 31st to enact that resolution. However, before we just move forward at his recommendation, I wanted you to hear from Charlie Smith, who may have a different viewpoint, and I think you're better able to make a decision if you hear both sides about it. So, Charlie, thank you for coming, and the podium is yours.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. In October of this year, I sent a memo to Judge Lee and to all of the taxing entities in the county addressing this issue, which is called a super Freeport. And I put a copy of that memo on your at your place today, but I wanted to go through and just hit some highlights. I think this is a catch-22 for county government. It's a catch-22 for virtually all of our governments in that it's a potential loss of revenue to the cities and the counties, and it's a and that's dangerous because the state controls the very few ways that we have of earning revenue. So it's a dangerous issue, but I think there's a plus and a minus on each side of it. The high points of this law, the original law was passed in 2007, and it was they brought it back in the 2011 legislature to clean it up. And basically what they did is specify that the facility that a company moves inventory into, now the company maintains the ownership of the inventory, but the facility that they move it into must be a public warehouse, all right? It must also be a facility that is in no way owned or controlled by the owner of the goods, okay? So in other words, in short, it's an arm's length transaction where I move this into your warehouse, I pay you a rent or a lease fee, et cetera, for it to be there, and when it's shipped out from your warehouse to the ultimate customer. So there's some downsides, and what I tried to do when this came up was look at the Titus County's existing industry and look at what the potential risk for you as a county or for the city was, and I think there is, in short, a very minimal risk that this will impact our revenue stream, and in fact, I think it can impact our ability to attract new companies and new industry to the area. Everybody has a different opinion. One person has told you that it's a dangerous issue and you need to act on it. And I won't tell you that it's not a dangerous issue. And I certainly have my preferences or. I can't think of the word I'm trying to come up with, but I prejudices towards it. But I'll give you some reasons and some thoughts behind it. First of all, a good bit of our industry is large product. Okay, it's a specifically a large product that is heavy. It's metal fabrication, etc. And these type operations are expensive to warehouse. Okay. They are expensive to move, cost money to move them, and it costs money to put them in and store them on a facility. So those are costs that the company is going to incur in transferring them to a public warehouse. In some cases, those products are already sold. They're sold prior to the construction of the item. And there I'm specifically talking about the wire and electric control cables and that sort of thing. All of those products are specially made. They're not warehoused as a control wire A that we just pull off the shelf and ship it to a new company. They are made specifically for a new oil refinery or a new nuclear power plant, etc., and they go directly to it as soon as it's made. So they're sold prior to being made. Then I address here on the page 2 the issue of food products. The liability of food products for the manufacturer is significant. We read in the paper every day about a product recall due to contamination, those kinds of things. Very difficult for a company to take that food product out of their immediate control and still maintain that liability. And here I'm talking about refrigeration or freezers. I'm talking about putting it in somebody else's warehouse and assuring that it's going to remain safe as a food product and then be shipped out. So I think there's a significant danger there. One argument is that public warehouses have very low pay and low skilled jobs. There's absolutely no argument about that. I think that's a fact, but I think that especially over the last 2 years, we have all seen that low pay and low skilled jobs are valuable to people that have low skills, and we need to have jobs across the board for all of our citizens. And while we all want to have high skill, high paid jobs, not everybody is capable of getting a job of that type. So I don't see that as a big negative. I think if you're out of balance where all you have to offer is low pay, low skill jobs, then that's a problem. But those are issues that I think should be considered. Finally, I think that the incremental advantage to moving to a public warehouse after you pay the cost of moving, et cetera, is going to be very minimal recognized product gain to the manufacturer. And I think those issues are issues that make this a very low risk for the city and very low risk for the county. Our college viewed this differently, but they represent multiple counties, and they have different products in those counties that may or may not be handled differently. One example is our freezer plant that is located in Camp County, where so much inventory goes already. It's already leaving our county and going to another county. I would tell you that the cost of production of a freezer plant that would be a arm's length transaction, owned by a different entity and operated by a different entity, would eat up the value saved in that product, where just in very tiny increments of cost affect the ability to sell that product. So I think there is minimal risk to the county. I think in the future, and I'm not talking about in the near future, but in the 5 to 10 year future, it could be an advantage to the county to have this available, where a public warehouse was built, a manufacturer located here specifically because the advantage was there. That would be a small product that is easily transferred with low risk, et cetera. Some of the items that you see today, especially during this season, Christmas season, products that you order through a online, through a major distributor, might be warehoused and picked by computer and put in a box and shipped out for the original owner. Some of the companies that are doing that are the FedEx, and some of those companies are doing that now, and they do it as a service to their manufacturer. But again, I think our manufacturers and the existing product lines that we have offer a relatively low risk for you. I think that I don't think it's going to make a big difference either way, and I'm not here to tell you that there's a line of people behind me that are opposed to this or in favor of it. I just think there are some things the county could benefit from in the long run. Governments are risk adverse. They don't like to take a risk in any case, and this is a risk, and I recognize that. But I think there's another side to it. I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
What specifically are industries that are affected in Titus County?
All industries, I would tell you, are going to be affected by it, in the sense that all could take advantage of it. The law specifically says that if you manufacture a product and ship it to your customer within the state of Texas within 165 days, and in today's world, if you're not shipping a product within 165 days, you've probably got bigger problems than the warehouse cost. But I would tell you that all manufacturers are technically eligible to take advantage of it.
But are there any that are taking advantage of it now that would not be able to if we acted to deny this exemption?
No, not that I'm aware of. The county and the hospital district have what is called a freeport exemption, and that is for goods shipped out of the state of Texas within, I believe, 165 days, maybe 120, but I think it's 165. There are very few industries in town, in the county, that are taking advantage of that. And again, it's because of the bookkeeping and the verification that I have to go through. I'm basically opening my inventory up, et cetera, to be examined more closely. And because of that, the exposure, it's not, the advantage is not there. But virtually all of our industries are shipping both in the state and outside of the state. The super freeport impacts goods then shipped in the state only.
Thank you. have a question to you, Judge Lee. What do you understand is our responsibilities as a court to act or not act on this issue? And I forget what was brought up at the Extension Service Seminar.
If you want to make a move like the hospital and the college have done, we will draft a resolution, which has been provided to us by Mr. Allison, and we will enact that at the next meeting 2 weeks from now, which will be prior to year end. And that will prevent anyone from being able to take advantage of this. But again, you're protecting us from a problem that right now doesn't exist because of the nature of our primary manufacturers. You've got Prefert, you got Decoron, you've got Newlywed Foods, things like this. And Charlie, as I'm understanding, is saying these are not businesses that are going to probably be utilizing this exemption. And so by enacting this resolution, if we chose to do so, we would not be stopping any current problems, but we might be making ourselves less desirable to a client that Charlie would entertain in an effort to bring them to town. If their question was, do you have the Freeport exemption? This is our product, and we will benefit by building a warehouse here or hiring services from a warehouse or here. So that's your decision. But we will have to do that at the next meeting, sign that, put that resolution into effect at that time. Today, I just wanted you to hear Charlie's side of it. You heard Jim Allison's side of it. And if you would like to move forward with enacting that resolution, just say the word, and I will put that on the next agenda, and we will vote for it or against it at that time.
Now, as I understand, 100% of the counties in the state of Texas have to enact this in order for it to go into effect. Is that correct, or is it selective to
each county? It's all county by county, is it not?
It is county by county. Each county will have an opportunity to opt in or opt out. That's correct. And I think there's I don't know about the issue of opting out later. In the original legislation for a Freeport exemption, you could opt out at any point in the future. In this case, I can't address that for you, Commissioner, but I know that to opt in, you have to act now. Super
Freeport.
Just for this one. It's just for the in-state shipments, and it's just for this opportunity to place inventory in a public warehouse. Has no effect on the current Freeport exemption, and the laws are considerably different. There's no public warehouse involved in a Freeport exemption, only on the Super Freeport.
Charles, does this have any effect on the tax abatements for a new company coming in? This doesn't affect that anyway, does it?
Doesn't affect. I didn't. I may not.
Tax abatements that we give companies.
Tax abatements that you consider for industry are for real property. That is the building that is new to the property and equipment that is new. Has no effect. We do not give tax abatements for inventory.
This doesn't affect that in any way. Somewhere I had in my mind that it did, but
no.
I
does not. The
is there any property in Titus County right now that someone might take advantage of this by placing their property that's already on the tax roll that's presently being taxed, put it into a public warehouse, shield it from the property taxes?
Every manufacturer in this county could technically take advantage of that and shield their inventory from being taxed.
If that inventory was presently on the tax roll, would decrease our total property evaluation to be assessed for taxes?
Would it? Yes.
Okay.
And that warehouse can be anywhere in the state? It has to be in the state?
That's correct, to my
knowledge.
It doesn't
have to be in the county, but it has to be in the state.
That's correct. It doesn't specify. It just says that I'll put it in a public warehouse. In reading the law, I see no direction as to where that warehouse is or has to be.
And
of course,
so
anywhere you put it, the further away you put it, the more cost I incur.
But you could put it down the road in Titus County if you wanted to, and somebody could build a building and enter into a deal with Bill Preford and say, we'll house that inventory for you. Well,
that's
that
correct.
Means he's got to take all that large inventory and move it offside into that other building. So what I'm seeing is our primary manufacturers, to make a move like that would almost, in my mind, cost more than the potential savings that you're looking for in taxes. This is designed for somebody with microchips or something like that, where they can store millions of dollars in a warehouse before shipping.
Amazon Books is another good example.
What?
Where
Amazon Books.
I print these books. I'm going to print 10,000 of them, whether they're sold in advance or not. I'll put them over here in this warehouse, and as we get orders for them, the orders are going to come in one at a time. We're going to ship them out, and I'm going to put them in a box for you, the owner. I'm going to put an address label that you give me on it, and we're going to ship them out. That's a good example.
What is that compared to the cost of paying
for it?
Compared
to the and transportation.
And every industry is going to look at every opportunity they have to cut costs. And in today's market, and that's where they're going to be successful.
Decoron, for instance, they don't build cable and shelve it there. Everything that they build is to order. It goes out the door as soon as it's on that spool and ready to roll. Newlyweds, is that all custom orders as well?
No. They'll warehouse, and they'll have warehouses and that sort of thing.
Okay. You anticipate they would take advantage of this any more than they already are?
Well, my thought is that it goes back to that control of the inventory and safety and liability. I have a customer. I'm shipping it to up here to Paris, to Campbell Soup, and I can put it in a public warehouse and save that. The value of that inventory is very low to start with, and the shipping and handling, but I lose, the main thing is that I gain the loss of, I lose the control of that inventory. I don't know where it's been. I don't know if it's been contaminated. And I'm not going to take a chance on somebody, the liability there by having something found in my product or it being blamed for me. Going to want to minimize that. That's the same reason that the rail cars of product come in and they go through metal detectors and they go through all kinds of testing as they come into those big silos, because they don't want, it's safety.
Okay. My concern is simply that the warehouse lobby industry has generated this legislation to benefit specifically their business at the expense of not just our county, but multiple tax base. And it would take a pretty good argument for me to support that.
I understand. The history of this in 2007, it started because of so many states don't charge inventory at all. They do not tax inventory. So especially border communities, in this case El Paso, was completely surrounded by New Mexico that did not charge an inventory. And their industries were putting their products over there in that other state, and they were losing that value. And this was, and because of that, it was making location issues for the city of El Paso. And that's where it started. And then the entire state realized that this is a bad law because it doesn't address this public inventory, public warehouse, and it doesn't address this arm's length transaction. I could just buy a warehouse over there, and when it came out of my plant, I'd just take it over there and I'm avoided. Any other questions? Thank you.
Charlie, thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
Again, what I'm hearing you say is if you don't want to support that lobby of the warehouse industry, you'd like to see us enact that resolution. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I think the warehousing lobby generated this legislation to pull product, pull property from the local tax rolls. And in this economy, and after we've been through what we've been through on our taxes and trying to generate enough taxes to keep the wheels turning in county, I'm not in the Christmas spirit right now.
So I'm hearing you say you want to enact a resolution that would prohibit this.
Yes.
Well, that's what you other three need to be thinking about over the next couple of weeks. And if you would like to see this put on the agenda with the possible signing of a resolution, that's your decision to make.
Judge, what really bothers me is that you don't have an option to opt out later on. If there was an option to opt out, I might see it. My main concern is the taxpayer. Down the road, we see this is not a good program. If we decide to opt out, we could. In my understanding, there's nothing there that we can opt out later on, can we? Once it's done, right? And later on, if we wanted to do this, we couldn't do it either. In other words, you either do it now or never. I think that takes some fine-tuning, too. You know, the freeboard tax, we have an option there. And what it amounts to, if you have a warehouse over here and they take advantage of this, that means the local taxpayers are going to have to pay for that was being paid or would be paid, and their taxes possibly could go up a little.
It all comes back to what it does to the majority of the taxpayers in Titus County. And if it's a positive, I'm for it. If it's not a positive, it causes their tax burden to increase, and I'm against it.
Well, but let me be the devil's advocate and suggest a scenario whereby you enact this resolution and you are now labeled as one of those unfriendly counties for a potential manufacturer that is looking at places to build their new facility. And they say, Charlie, are you a yes or no county? Well, we're a no. You can't warehouse your goods here.
If it's a single issue deal, then I think they're being short-sighted, because we already provide assistance with land and property to build their business in the Industrial Foundation. We also we right now offer tax abatements to companies to come in here and set up shop. And that was enacted some time ago. So I don't think we're unfriendly to industry. I think we're very sensitive to specific lobbies who use the state legislature to benefit their specific industry at the expense of the local taxpayers.
Probably at this point in time, our taxes are slow. They're not going to be able to warehouse this stuff anyway any cheaper, I wouldn't think.
You make a good point. I mean, our taxes are very low.
Yeah.
And, by comparison, if they were to tax, if they were to produce this product in Travis County, which has a much higher tax rate, it would probably be cheaper just to bring it up here and store it and pay the taxes than it would be to us for a tax-free location.
Okay. Good arguments. Good thoughts.
Charlie, have you presented this? Have you been to the schools and the other taxing entities to
have I presented
to the school or the just confusion there, yeah.
In other words, they're going to continue to tax it. The city, my understanding is that they are not. They're not.
What about school? What about the school? What do you think they're planning on doing?
The law specifically, I've got it on the last page here. The law specifically exempts those inventories from counting against the school. Where is it?
Yeah, page 3.
Bottom of the third page. The wealth lost to this exemption will be deducted from the district's taxable wealth by the comptroller. That's the figure that they use to fund their schools. So it doesn't count as a penalty to the school. But I will tell you that most school districts are so stressed right now over the recent legislation and funding in general that they're afraid of it. And again, they're risk adverse. They're afraid of it. And a lot of the financial advisors, et cetera, as you heard, are concerned about it. And I think some schools, districts may very well need to be, but I think there's a low risk here, but that doesn't mean there's a low risk everywhere or what's good for our school district is good for everybody.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you once again.
Thank you.
Judge, I know after our meeting last week, and this is one of the things that was brought up in the county extension office out there. Jim Allison was there, and he represents the Association of Counties in Texas, and he recommended not to do that, to opt out of it.
No, he did not. He recommended to enact it. He recommended He gave us a copy of the resolution, said, I recommend you get this done by the end of the year.
Yes.
Now, that's his overall State of Texas speech to everybody that he speaks with, which is 254 counties. He doesn't necessarily know what's unique to each county, but you're right. That was his recommendation. Okay, well, there you've got something to be considering. All right.
We need a table list for next meeting.
Well, I don't have anything on here for action today, but I was not going to bother putting it on the next agenda if the feelings were we don't want to tax that inventory. But if you do, and if you do want to follow what Jim Allison recommended, we do need to put that resolution consideration on our meeting for the 27th.
I would ask that at this point in time, I want to follow Jim's recommendation.
Okay.
I may change my mind between now and the next. As of right now.
Well, I've got at least two of you that are that way, so I'm going to plan on that being on the agenda.
Okay.
All right, item number 4, consider and possibly approve purchase and installation of programmable thermostats for the courthouse, annex, election administration office, and extension office. We just replaced several complete air conditioning units here within the last 4 months, and every one of those had a new programmable thermostat. There's one in my office, there's one in here, there's one in several different points in the courthouse here, and they are working well. I've programmed each of them myself where the heat or the air conditioning is going off at 5 o'clock and coming back on about an hour, hour and a half before we start business the next day. That means there's no unnecessary heat or air conditioning running all night long or on the weekend. Problem is, we have several locations that still have the older digital but not programmable thermostats throughout all of these different locations, and I think we would benefit tremendously by completing that conversion of all the thermostats. I did get a price from Roberts Refrigeration, installed, programmed, and materials of $135 each. However, I did a little investigating on my own. I can buy the materials only for $65 each. So that kind of gives you an idea of how much room might be there for installing them ourselves or getting a subcontractor to come in and install all of those. So there's a ballpark idea of what it's going to cost. Ernie and William are getting me a total count of remaining thermostats that are still the old style so that we'll have an idea of what that will cost. At this point, I can't tell you if we've got 20 thermostats to convert or not, but you're talking about making an expenditure that'll benefit us for years to come. I was up here a week ago Saturday for the activities on the square and came into the courthouse to allow them to do the judging of the chili, and it was a nice warm 72 degrees on that cold Saturday in the main hallway of the courthouse. And we do have some department heads that are carefully turning down their thermostats at night and on the weekend, but if you happen to forget it, you know, this place is closed down, you know, two-thirds as much as it's open, and so there's a lot of potential for a lot of waste of utility dollars.
What about program? Is there going to be one person that does the programming?
When they install them, I'll give them specific instructions on how to install. I want them to click on at this time, at this temperature, and click on at this time, at this temperature. They're always overridable by anybody who gets a little cold during the day. Or who happens to stay late, but then the final programming change might occur, say, at 9 o'clock at night, where even if they worked till 7 and they left, it would still shut the thing down even if they forgot to do that. But, yes, I'll have that. Those programming instructions will be in the hands of whoever actually does the installation of these so that they're all consistent throughout. And then at that point, all we'll be responsible for is changing the time, you know, when daylight savings comes around. These may be, I'm not sure what the capabilities of these are.
I think this was about 6-7 years ago we talked about this. At that time, I guess it just kind of died because of the lack of pushing it onward, which shouldn't have been done. I agree. I think it would save tremendously.
I think one of the things we did, Mike, was wait on when you was going to replace a bunch of air conditioners. We thought we'd do it all at the same time then.
Yeah. But I definitely think it.
This does not encumber us to a contract with Roberts. This just says that we're going to do this thing, and then we will look into alternatives to contracting the whole thing and maybe doing it ourselves or with some contractors. Is that correct?
Once I have a total quantity, I can sit down with Roberts and say, listen, I can hire somebody to come in just on a contract basis and install these 20 new contracts and thereby save myself this much over your price. There may be some negotiability there with Roberts, I don't know, but let's get us a total quantity count here. And if you'd like to see what a total dollar cost is at the next meeting before I proceed, I will do that. Or if you want to give me the latitude to go ahead and make that call between now and the end of the year before our holidays begin, do that. So, whatever you'd like.
Well, I move that we approve the purchase and installation. I would like to keep abreast of the negotiations.
Sure.
That needs to come up at the next meeting for a contract or something like that.
Okay.
I'd be for that, but okay. I think it needs to be done. I know 20 years ago we did this at Francis Corporate when I was on the school board, and it was a disaster. Because they didn't have the override function. And if you let me just say demographics at a school means that there's going to be a disparity between who's hot and who's cold. And the maintenance was back and forth over there on who is setting these things and at what temperature. And but with the override function, I think that's I think that solve our problem.
Well, you're always going to have somebody in the office that way. One of them's going to be hot, one's going to be cold. Women.
So I make that motion that we approve the purchase.
With the knowledge of total cost prior to final authorization?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I'll have that for you in 2 weeks at the next meeting then.
I'll second.
All right, second, all those in favor of this purchase of programmable thermostats with the understanding that you will be provided with a total cost before purchase at the next meeting, say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you. All right, item number five, consider and possibly approve a NetData hardware contract. And Sean is here today. And Sean, this is something we do annually, is that right?
Every year,
okay.
It looks like this one's dated back for September. You have to forgive me, I got a pretty nasty cold. And so we're already a few months into this, and what I would do, if you do want to consider it, I'd try to see if you can get them to prorate it. The difference is you've got a $5,000 offer, and what that allows is basically for them to work with us and for them to work with you. They'll pick up the phone when you call and unlimited all that, and they'll send a guy out once a year to do some system stuff. That's pretty standard. The question was, what's the difference between the 5 and the 10, and should you do the 10 over the 5 or vice versa? Really,
between the 5 and the 10.
Okay, the $5,000 just offers what I just mentioned, just support, basic support. And that's standard for all counties that have NetData. Everybody uses that. The level 2 is really, you get a few perks. It's got the big thing on is the disaster recovery service, and essentially what that is if anything happens over there, the annex, it floods or whatever, they have a server on site on their side that they'll bring out within 24 hours and get you back up and running until you purchase a new server and have all that put in, and all that they'll cover. But what they don't cover is the equipment, so you'll still be out, you know, however much those are, 50 or 60,000. One thing that it shows here, if you go from the 5 to the 10, it's called hardware support level 2. It says free installation of iSeries. You guys just bought one. So unless the disaster happens, I would assume, you know, you're not really going to take advantage of that. It says 2 on-site updates for PTS and or OS 400. You know, that kind of stuff they already do. And you don't necessarily have to have it. Honestly, it's kind of like an insurance thing. If it happens, you'll wish you would have. But if you don't, then, you know, it's kind of a gamble, $5,000. I would probably do it if it were my company. It's $5,000, and if it happens, it's better than spending 20. And, you know, but I would definitely get them to prorate it if you're going to do it. What are we, 3 or 4 months in since this has been offered? Have we already paid the $5,000? Okay. So you've been getting support for that long, at least, you know, that's helpful. We've never called them or worked with them and said, no, we're not going to help you until you agree to this contract. They've just been providing that support, assuming you're going to do it, I guess. I don't know. But really, the only things, like I said, that I mentioned are it's for disaster recovery. You've got a few things that they offer that you won't take advantage of because you fairly recently upgraded your server, and it's good for another 5 years or so. As far as I can tell, the contract's fairly vague, but as far as I can tell, you would take advantage of it. Yeah.
Really, it comes down to this: they offer us these two options. The last 7 years, we've gone with a $5,000 option, $10,000 option.
My only deal is in the annex building, and I haven't seen it much this year, but we've had issues with flooding in the past. The servers and stuff are sitting up on 2x4s and stuff like that. Which is good for them to be off the ground, but you know, if you had one bad rain or something, anything going down, we'd be in a lot of trouble. So,
don't we have
fire
insurance that covers that apart from?
Yeah, but I think the difference here, Tom, is that they're backing everything up there, so they will have a lot of money.
We run daily backups, so what we would do is all those backups are put into a safe. And so we'd have to give them those tapes. They run remote backups, but it's not everything that you need to get you back up.
Yeah, NetData, all they're doing is saying we got a server that we can bring over here.
Essentially, yeah. And I've seen them do it, and they do it quick. They have you back up within 24 hours. If you don't, you're looking at, you remember how long it took once we ordered, once everybody, we did approve the last server, how long it took to finally get the thing and then finally get it in and get it converted? You know, the county would be down for that long. That's my concern.
Week, 2 weeks, what are we talking about, worst case?
It was longer than that. It was
3 months
weeks.
Or so.
Yeah, it was at least 6 weeks.
Long time.
So,
negative to having a server-based system.
Yeah.
You've got the stuff on the side.
Right. Yeah.
You're telling me that if we didn't go with that higher price contract and we had a flood or some disaster occurred at the annex, we could lose computer functionality for weeks or months?
Well, it's kind of a trick deal, but what would really happen if that happened? What would really happen is you would go down and call NetData. They would charge you $150 an hour for every person that works, and they would get you one of the servers that they have on site already. Now, what this is a guarantee that one of those servers sitting over there is yours. So if something happens, it goes down. If you, of course, you don't use it. I mean, it's a $50,000 server, so it's not like, you know, you're paying $5,000. It's going to sit there, and you're never going to use it. But say you used it, you'll be back up on site. I mean, they'll work weekends and whatever to get you back up online. Outside of that, if something really happened, then what you would see is call NetData, call us. We would coordinate. We would get you back up online as soon as we can. I would think maybe a few days, maybe a week.
At a cost of what?
It would be outrageous. Not from our perspective, but from NetData's, just because of how much time you have. They would probably go ahead and charge you for the server on the site. And now I'm guessing. I've never seen that happen. But I would assume that it would probably be in the $20,000 range or so, you know, minus the cost for the server itself, which would be another $50,000. So,
but you're going to pay for that server whether you upgrade to the higher policy anyway.
Yes, sir. That is true. Yeah. So. We talked about moving it over to the sheriff's office before, and I assume that's where it would go. I could get my guys on it, and we'd have your spot ready. That wouldn't be a huge deal. So, you know, we run backups on all your network equipment. We'd basically be buying your stuff, having it expedited, and us getting everything set up. And as far as the IBM server goes, NetData is really kind of the only ones hands-on on that. We run general maintenance on it, and we do support on the client side. So,
now, when we got this server, it took us 120 days to get it online.
A lot of that was because the other system was so fragile. It was so slow responding.
We were told it wasn't because they didn't have the server. They had to build the server.
Yeah, it did take a long time to get it ordered, you're right. But a lot of the reason, yeah, it was kind
of
too
a combination of those two things, I think.
Yeah, it was a mixture of both. It took them a while to get it in. Took them a long time to get it in. Even once it was approved, and then once you got it here, it took a really long time to get everything done. And you added a couple of new pieces of hardware, and a lot of it was because they pulled hardware data from the old one. Not everything got migrated correctly. There was some corruptions and some issues. They had to go back multiple times pulling it from it because the server kept crashing. I mean, it was under so much load.
This is one reason why the server-based system is something that you know, I looked into really closely a couple of years ago.
Sure.
And someone who has off-base processing or off-site processing, huge mega server.
Right.
We don't have
that. No. The only problem that you have in a situation like that is you're completely dependent upon your internet connection. So if your internet goes down, which doesn't happen very often anymore, which is a good thing. But if your internet ever goes down, you're not going to be able to function as a county. And somebody else, obviously, they've got your material. So there's pros and cons, but I agree with you, Don. I think that's where everything's going.
But your internet service is redundant. I mean, you've got another alternative.
Exactly.
In case suddenly went down, you'd have this coming in.
And that's exactly how you do it. Yeah, you purchase multiple IPs from two different companies, and if one goes down, the other one. Of course, you've got the interlay between the two. Something happens between the two, but that kind of stuff is few and far between. I mean, you're talking about a matter of hours and maybe a day that you're down. So there's pros and cons to both, but as far as the contract's concerned, with what you have and what you've paid and what you're doing, $5,000 is not bad. I mean, I compared it.
What's your recommendation to us if you were sitting here? Would you get the $5,000 or would you pay the extra $5,000?
I'd pay the extra $5,000, and the reason I say that is because we work with schools or we replace network equipment in schools, and the general cost there is between $10,000. That's just for network equipment. But for disaster recovery on just network switches, is between $10,000 and $15,000. This is on the low spectrum. So you're looking at $5,000 really, because you're going to pay $5,000 already. I would do it because I don't want to be the one sitting there saying, I wish we had done it when something goes wrong. But that's just how I run my business. It's
CMA deal.
I know. So it's not necessarily, it's one of those things, you spend $5,000 and you may never see it. And it's more likely that you won't. But on the flip side, It's better than spending a lot more, you know, 20 or 30. Of course, you're gonna, if you do this every year, you're gonna end up paying that over time if nothing ever happens to. The only other thing that I would consider is if you wanna wait on it, if you're gonna do it, it's always best to do it closer to time when you're about to renew your server if you were gonna buy a new one, because you get that free installation. And that's, you know, it's a pretty good cost, I think, so.
All due regards, I would move that we just do the $5,000 one.
That's what we do every year.
I'll make the motion.
Motion by Commissioner Boggs that we do approve the NetData hardware contract at tier number one, the lesser cost of $5,000. Second by Commissioner Hinton. All those in favor of the $5,000 contract say aye.
Aye.
And it's approved. Thank you, Sean. All right. Item number six, we have a presentation from our IT committee on our county's email and web hosting service. Thanks, Chris, for being here, and what have you got to tell us about what changes we should consider?
And thanks for all the hard work y'all do.
Thank you.
That takes it all from us.
Well, we tried. does everyone have the printout? I believe Paul brought it
yes.
out before. I'm not going to talk about the numbers to you. I have David here to kind of answer questions about the numbers and any support questions Sean has stayed on. We talked about this because of different reasons, mainly because we work so well with Cabro, and we feel that having Cabro do the email and the website under that same umbrella is going to be not only cost effective, it's going to be very time effective also. Everything that they do, their response has just been wonderful. Everyone in the committee has talked about how well their response is. And so that, for one thing, is a pro for moving forward for the county. Talking about the website, the way that we've got, the way that they have presented it, we will have a server, and so that website server will be here on site. It will be Titus County server and website, whereas now, if you notice, we have an expert who is has control over that. We have to ask them for, in this instance, to get a disk. And so it's really their control, whereas if we end up doing it this way, if Cabro backs out, we're out, of, they're not our IT company anymore, we have our website. So we can take over right away. And I think that's a really good advantage.
So do you also have service issues with Expert?
Yes, that was cool. And I don't want to down Expert. I'm just saying that, you know, if you look at their billing and everything, we don't know exactly what they're billing us for. Cabro has that system of a problem ticket. They can back up what they're billing us for. And so that's, you know, if we're looking at numbers and everything, we can justify what we're paying out to. Another thing is the advantages that we would have is each department would be able to customize their own website. If you look at the website now, we're very limited, and everything that we put on there, for instance, the county attorney's office has started putting their newsletter online. Well, what Kim has to do is email that to Expert, then they spend the time to put it on, whereas Cabro will give us that opportunity to do it ourselves. So there's not going to be any cost in doing that. And each department, especially the sheriff's department, they have a lot of great ideas that they want to do. We can post our own employment online. The sheriff's office, they want to be able to post their warrants. We could also do our court docket where people can check it. Another recommendation is doing a jury services link where if somebody is going to be called to court and it's canceled, they can look online and we can post it at 8:30 in the morning or 8 o'clock the first time we come in. The county clerk can do that and say, you know, if you're here for jury service, it has been canceled. That people will have that resource to go to. You know, they can either call in. At this point in time, I think they can call in, or if we end up where we don't have a need for a jury, they end up having to send out notices again to them saying, we no longer need your services. So kind of saving some money in that regard. Again, time efficiency. You know, we're having to go through for email. We talk to Carolyn. Will you please call them and, you know, add this person, or there's a problem. There was, you know, talk about how we don't know, do we call Cabro about that, or do we call, you know, is it something that maybe we're just, there's some kind of link problem that Cabro can fix right quick, or is it a bigger issue? And so, you know, we're getting Cabro involved in that, and then it ultimately has to go to expert. So there's all this time that's being wasted, or I hate to say wasted because it's solving a problem, but we could be more efficient if we were all under one umbrella as far as the IT with Cabro, with the email and the website.
May I ask a question? When expert was brought in as our web host, was it not when you worked for NetData before you split off?
Yes, sir.
And I think just to kind of give some perspective, I think that was ancillary to the conflicts that were going on in the courthouse at the time between a couple of elected officials. And I think that it's, you know, it's kind of like paying two people to do the same thing.
Exactly. And that was one of the things that Sean had said, was that he's not going to always charge us for something that, you know, hey, we call him up or get do the trouble ticket, and he comes in or he calls and says, you know, what's the problem, and he can fix it. That's all under his contract anyway. If it's something that, you know, he would be doing anyway, it's not, he's not going to nitpick on every little thing when it comes to the email and the website.
Didn't you say Tim was going to use the website as kind of a job openings, personnel opportunities?
That's an option. If we have that option to go in, and if there's anything within the county, each of us in our department could even have a link that says employment, Titus County.
That would be great.
And then everybody can look on. We could even download some type of employment application there. Everything that would make it a lot easier. People go to the clerk's office. I think I was up there the other day. Gentleman comes in, I want to see what you guys have available. So, well, you know, and we have that too because of our office being downstairs. People walking in, do y'all have anything posted? I don't even know where to tell them other than the auditor's office to go to. So if we have more information that we can have, you know, and our website is more user-friendly, and we can work out some of those kinks with the less amount of time, and each of us being able to individualize it to our needs and not worry about, well, how much is this going to cost us? I think that, you know, it's going to be more efficient. And again, the idea that we have Cabro that we already work with, we have a great working relationship with, and have no complaints whatsoever about the great people that they have working for them.
No complaints?
No. And so those are just a few of the things that we've come up with that we felt that was really important, and helps us to do our job a lot easier and without frustrations. And
I'm curious as to the money. Tell me about the money.
Well, as far, I'm going to tell you very briefly, and then I'm going to let David and Sean take that over a little bit. You'll see the one-time charge. There's a server charge of $1,000, and that is just to get our the website. It's just going, and it will be a secure website. And, you know, that's very important, because if we're having someone from the outside, it's going to be harder for them to come in and try to get in our website and download things that we don't want on there. So that website is going to be secure. and they're going to make sure that that's going to be always the case with that
server. That was one of my questions, security.
Yes.
Because you know the situation down in Longview last year where they got into, I believe it was almost Kilgore, they got into Kilgore and they ended up some foreign bank in some foreign country, ended up about $20,000 of ISD.
Right, right.
Well, now, this server would have nothing to do with tying into our financial
records.
It's
on its own.
It would be simply secure to the point of nobody could come in and manipulate our website.
That's correct.
That's why it's going to be set up on a separate machine. They can't get into this machine and then have access to other parts. It would be
and
a standalone.
Each department will have, from my understanding, and Sean can clarify that, will have a password or something, and my suggestion is that it be the department head or their designee, and it, not everyone in that department should be able to go online and change things or add things, so that we can minimize who's responsible for what's being put on the website. So, all that's taken into consideration as far as the security. We don't want a disgruntled employee doing something that they shouldn't be doing to ruin the reputation of Titus County. So,
you can change the password.
Correct.
If needed.
That is correct.
One question I had was, you were talking about if that opening came somewhere in the courthouse, you could put this online stuff. Mm-hmm. But in some situations, not everybody has a computer.
And that's true.
So what would we do to help those people if there's a job opening here or something, say in this office, could they post it on the board or something like that?
Well, I don't know what the policy is now. However they're doing it now is what, and then maybe that's something that you guys need to talk about. How are we going to post this? I know that you go through probably the Workforce Commission, right?
So to do that.
We're supposed to go to the Workforce Commission and post it in the newspaper. So.
Right. And so the online thing for someone who's out of town, that's going to be easy and convenient for them. It's easy for someone who's, we could work that out, all those wiggles out that, who's going to look at those and determine that. But, of course, it's going to be the department heads that would look at those applications anyway. That was just an idea of all the different things that we can do with the website when it's under our control and make it more user-friendly, make it, you can have all sorts of things going across about the burn bans, all sorts of things that you guys decide that are new and exciting that people would like to see. I mean, we're in the technology world, and so
we're going to pay for all that. I mean, if we start piling a bunch of neat projects on top of Sean, that's going to drive that bill up and up. Whereas right now, we're fairly hesitant to utilize the service because it's difficult. So, I mean, that's a trade-off. It's not like you're going to spend the same amount of money and now you're going to have all these neat, cool features. You're going to pay for those. But some of those will require initial setup time, and they'll be in place, and they'll be usable for months or years to come after that initial setup.
And it's not going to be done without an approval. I mean, if there's something major, Sean's not going to go and do it just because somebody's asking him to do it. If it's something major that is going to be costly, he's going to alert us to it and say, okay, let's talk about this, because I know the Sheriff's Department is one that really wants to do a lot. And we talked about that in the meeting, too, that nothing can be done without an approval if it's anything major above and beyond what he's contracting out to do.
So, well, who's going to make that? Is that going to be the committee make that, or is that going to come back to us?
Well, we can't decide that. We can talk to them and chew out everything that we need to present to you guys, but you guys are the ones going
to
have
it. Needs to come back to you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We don't decide on anything.
I think Sean can run a smell test on it and see if it's something that needs to go to the IT committee. And you go to the IT committee, and then Chris or somebody says, we need to go to the court with this.
Right.
Surely there's that much kind of accountability involved.
Well, that final decision needs to come back to here.
It always comes back to us.
Always. And that's our understanding. We don't decide anything without your approval. So, we're just really excited about trying to get that all done so that we have one company to deal with, and everybody knows K-Bro, and know, how to get in touch with them if there's any problems. You know, that's the thing. You know, like I said, there's, I didn't even know until I got on the IT committee who's doing the email and the website. So, I mean, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where everybody in the county can be unified and work under, you know, one system.
There was no cable when we did, when we first did this to start with.
Right.
And that's one reason.
So we still are moving forward and we still want to.
Well, I do know the website needs some serious upgrade.
Yes, it does.
You know,
we can, you know, the IT committee can talk about ideas and present those to you and say, look, and this is what it's going to cost and what do you think? And, you know, we're, you know, I don't think each department is going to make a major decision that's going to mar Titus County's name, you know, without your approval. And I think everybody needs to understand that, that that's not the idea behind it. You know, those passwords are not going to be just given out and say, here, you've got free reign. I think that each department is going to have to submit something to say, this is what we want to do, and then go. I'm just saying that the cost of that is just going to be a lot less, and it's going to be easier to do those things with approval.
Could you answer a question on this billing sheet?
I will try, if not, David.
On September 10th, there was a charge of $85 for Joyce. Static IP address. What was that?
Do you have any idea? On that second page, let's scroll up and at the bottom.
I mean, who would have a static IP address in the county?
See, and that's the thing. We don't, a lot of this billing is not.
Simpson, I mean, she's been gone for a year.
One thing I can think is they dealt with her for a while, so they didn't set her on file.
Oh.
I think Carolyn's the new Joyce.
Do you need to sign the status IP address, Carolyn? That office wanted a parallel access to the website that normal channels wouldn't cover.
All right, let's talk about the cost here. I've got a few questions here if you want to turn it over to David or Sean. Okay, let's start up there with that option one and option two. Obviously, I like the $49.99 one, but what am I giving up over the $64.99?
Okay. The main difference between the $64.99 and the $49.99 is unlimited support with option one. That means if anything happens with email, and this, the top section is strictly email. That means if it's email related, that's where we're going to be at. That's our cost, unlimited. If we run 100 hours at, and the current billing rate for expert is 85, it's going to be, with Sean, it's going to be 75. If we run 100 hours in email, that's going to be $7,500.
What does email require in the way of service? Adding, deleting email addresses? What else?
Essentially, on email, we're going to be setting up the establishment of the account. So if you have someone new, like if I come to the office, they've got to set me up an email address. Or if I leave, they're going to have to delete my email address. That's the main email points that I see us really having.
We start
All right, let's move on to web hosting costs.
Okay. Web hosting costs are option one, option two are basically the same. There was no difference there. Under the expert column, you'll see that we're paying them $55 a month or $660 annually just to host the website. Going to Cabrillo, it's going to be $40 a month or 4